Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Jane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Phil Kirshner, the founder and principal consultant at PK Consulting. Through practitioner and consulting roles, Phil has used mixed method research and advanced analytics to demonstrate the positive impact of workplace change on individual and team productivity, talent attraction and retention, and employee engagement. Tune in to discover, first, leadership impact through storytelling, the importance of how leaders show up and share stories to increase team awareness and improve collaboration. Second, API mindset for team dynamics, embracing a dynamic approach to documenting team interactions, making it adaptable and ever-evolving rather than static. Finally, this episode is filled with practical tips for team development. For example, Phil recommends recording meetings and compiling a library of resources that can be curated for onboarding, training, and enhancing team workflows. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Phil Kirshner. Phil has been inspiring me with a lot of stories around employee experience, workplace strategy, the future of work, and how people kind of turn up and operate in teams. So it's going to be a great conversation. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thank you.
So for the benefit of our listeners, what's your backstory, Phil? How'd you come to be doing all this cool work?
Yeah, thank you. So I've really been sitting at the intersection of, like, I guess, people, place, and technology for a long time. My background is in technology, so I'm sort of a systems and data-oriented thinker naturally. I got started my career in information security and at a bank. I was at Credit Suisse for years. That job basically had me running around business to business. You know, for whatever reason, was flagged or someone was important enough. Hey, I'm here to kind of talk about risk and a lot of the risk in your systems and data architecture, some of which came from how you are working or how you work with your developers. But always felt a little bit like I was being placated. Like, What do I have to do to get you to go away? Then I fell into cost management, went back to largely a lot of the same businesses saying, hey, I'm here because you're spending too much on something. And that spend comes from a combination of decisions that you're making as a business and how you work with each other. I found a little bit more attention, CAO, CFO, COO types or different businesses at the bank, because a little bit of this attitude, who are you to tell me what I should spend my money on?
Yeah.
But then I fell into workplace. And the first time that I came around to the same people, again, CAO, CFO, COO type, being like, let's talk about that office that you personally are sitting in right now and like the workplace for your team. The response that I got from them was wholly unexpected in terms of the, like, sit up and put the pencils down and be like, wait a minute, what did you just ask about? And that line between now this is my profession and my business objectives, but also my personal feeling, like, I completely fell in love with, and that changed the course of my career forever. So I left the bank as the American Center Workplace Strategy, and then went through different real estate and workplace roles, first at JLL, then at WeWork, sort of like truly vertically, you know, integrated version of there's a better way for workplace. COVID happened, left, started my own consulting practice, and then just finished a 3-year stint at McKinsey, which is the maybe like the greatest feeling of being on top of the mountain in this radical moment of change for work.
Yes.
And seeing the, like, above the cloud, almost CEO, CXO version of the same questions in a moment where no one is really sure about where we're going forward. So I usually say I'm an accidental workplace strategist, and it's all been really intense study and curiosity about how teams and people work together in these different new disciplines.
It's fantastic. So you've seen right in the midst of change, what's happening in the executive mindset around, and you use this word feeling very intentionally, like what's happening around how people feel about workplace and what work gets done in those workplaces. How much does the executive mindset shape some of those decisions, or is it a much deeper dive kind of ground up movement?
Yeah, I'll say, like, there were two kinds of clients by and large that I found myself working with, and McKinsey in particular. In one of the personas was like 95% of the time, and the other one was only 5% of the time. And the 5% was the, you know, projects that got started where usually a CEO woke up one day. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to say they called me directly on speed dial. That was not necessarily the case. But they, you know, they woke up in this post-COVID world, called, let's say, their senior partner buddy with a prompt to the effect of, everything has changed. I'm convinced everything is different. And that was just early COVID, remote work, hybrid. You could say the feeling is probably stronger now with the role that AI is playing in reimagining how we work. But CEOs got this moment of whatever was true yesterday is probably not true now. And I'm not sure like which way we're going exactly, but I know it's not the same way we've been going. Can you help me? And that led to projects where the anchor question was something in the order of, how do we reimagine the employee experience? How we work with each other, kind of operating system of work for this new normal.
Yeah.
Without any like belief that they knew the answer.
Mm.
So it leads to an executive team that's like, I think it's this way, and kind of a come with me, and also really interesting behaviors like eating their own dog food or dog, whatever the expression is, like an executive team that's willing to try some weird new camera for meetings first and then tell the employee base, we tried this weird new camera. And it was weird, true form, but it was better than us all being little Zoom boxes. So we're going to try it again and we'll report back.
Yeah.
And while that's happening, the employees who you have to like hope signed up to work for this company for some reason of personal fulfillment or passion, and they will sit there and go, like, I'm here for this. You don't think you know the answer, and you're trying just to make tomorrow better than yesterday. And instead, taking the 95% approach, which is this is the way, like Mandalorian said, this is the way.
Yes.
I thought that like the office is better, so I'm gonna put it in the hybrid policy and I'm gonna declare it done. But we're going back. This is it. I think I know the answer. We know, without involving you or showing any sign of humility or the possibility of being wrong.
Hmm.
And those projects would go so differently. You know, the 95%, it's more focused on cost. They're more likely to be asking what other people are doing and benchmarking and like the rapid version change instead of including everybody and leading with a sense of not knowing.
Yeah.
To test and to learn and to fail and be willing to like put the losses up on the board right next to the wins.
Yeah.
So that when someone comes and says, haha, like, we tried the new thing. We tried our new meeting guide or whatever, and it didn't work. We didn't like it. That it's how disarming it is to have somebody take that feedback and like put it publicly up on the wall.
Yeah.
And say, thank you. Like, okay, cool. I guess we will try that again. But have you tried this? Here's something that some other team has tried or experienced that may be similar or helpful in your case. And like, try that and let me know how that goes. And just making this one like a mental changes, which is tough because it is really hand-to-hand combat from now until forever. There's not going to be one answer in one way. But it goes so differently when the executive just like, I don't know. You don't know. I don't know. Let's all figure it out together.
It's neat. And it's a very team first, human first philosophy then.
Human first.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So when you do a project like that with that 5% of leaders that say, we know it's changed, let's explore not just what works best in the industry right now, but what works best for our people, our ways of working. What are the surprises that you run into in an organization? What do you start hearing customers say, oh, wow, that we tried this and this is happening?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, maybe similarities between groups that didn't realize they had similar problems. Or, you know, conversely, like differences with two groups that feel very aligned but realize that they operate in completely different ways. And a willingness to put together cross-disciplinary teams that try to the greatest extent possible to show up without a bias for what's causing the problem.
Yeah.
I I spend a lot of time in real estate now, and it's like very easy to go, oh, it's the office.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not. And a lot of leaders will say, oh, you know, we were so great, or this energy is so great in this office because the office is beautiful. Like, maybe it's actually because, you know, one office compared to the rest, that there's a leader who is showing up both literally and figuratively in a way that others are not.
Yes.
And it's not just that they're there, it's that they're regularly like in the cafe holding court, explaining something.
Yes.
To the youngest employees. And it's that's actually the dynamic that's creating the engagement and creating the employee experience. It's not where they are or like what the office looks like, and just more willing to hear those stories and share the stories almost as an underlying heartbeat separate from like what the organization actually does as a business, right?
Yeah.
Like, we all work, and this isn't going to get easier or change less quickly ever.
Yeah.
So we need to be focusing.
That's fascinating. And I'm seeing that in more businesses right now, that people are very busy. And I love your point. Work's not going to get any easier. But people are busy, work's hard, but there is a movement towards leaders who are more accessible, more better storytellers. I'm seeing a lot more teams asking of their leaders, hey, can you tell me a bit more of a story about where we're going? Don't just show me the steps to get there. Like, tell me the story.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, I think, latches on to a precondition of a greater desire for people who are, and I'll say this in the most general way, like younger.
Yeah.
Like, the kids these days like want some sense of purpose. Purpose is really important. And alignment of organizational purpose with my individual desire and fulfillment, like what gets me out of bed. Because, you know, it used to be, yeah, you go to the factory in town because that's where everybody works. Or someone tells you to go into banking.
Yeah.
It's like, that's where everybody works. And I remember, gosh, even 10 years ago now, doing kind of feature work presentations in particular with banks and financial services here, and some stat that like Bloomberg or the Journal, somebody had quoted about the percentage of the like top tier Harvard MBA graduates. It was like the 1% of the 1%. And if you take whatever they were called, the something, something scholars.
Yes.
Over a certain period of time, like it was a huge chunk that would just go into like banking finance. That was the thing to do.
Yeah.
And that like 10 years later, all of a sudden, it's like a very small percentage. And not only are a lot of them going into tech, but a lot of them are just starting their own business because they're like, this is the thing that's passionate to me. And COVID has just made that worse or better, depending on the perspective. Right? It's easier to start your own thing. More and more people are willing to give it a shot.
Yeah.
And I think, and this is really hard, like if you're... What is your purpose? No matter how good your marketing team is, if you're a big financial services firm, it largely boils down to like, yay, capitalism.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's tough. It's really tough, especially at the 100,000 person, 200,000 person scale, to carry something, wave a flag that every individual employee like really feels motivated by. And stability matters and compensation matters, but to a lot of people, like, when it's a question of, do I have to go in or not? You're telling me to do something. Then that purpose point or that flexibility pops up.
Yeah.
And it matters. So looking for something that's just more authentic. And top to bottom, how is this little thing that I do roll up to the big objective?
Yes.
I want to see so that I know, and it will help me feel like I'm contributing and know how I should interact and prioritize with others.
Yeah. And I see that creating a lot of energy, even when the work is hard or voluminous. It creates energy because people are like, I know what's expected of me in my role. I know how I'm performing or where I'm going in the future. But beyond that, I also know like why the world's a better place because of the work that we do. And I think particularly for the newer generation, that next step is very meaningful.
Yeah, totally. That, like here's what our little group stands for.
Yeah.
Here's how our little group stands for. Here's how we can work with you. When I think of it was a remote or virtual first leading firms. A lot of the practices that they share are about a culture of writing things down. And most people will hear that and go, right, great. It's asynchronous communication. They use voice and video and email or Slack or Teams or something instead of having meetings. Great, check. That's what it means to have a culture of writing things down.
Yeah.
But the extreme version, the GitLabs of the world, which I've been fortunate to kind of study, born remote at scale, will say, yeah, but that culture of writing things down also means writing down and publicly sharing a little bit of how the factory inside your small team works and what you are working on. Why is it so bad to expose to the rest of the organization? Here's our big five, big 10 priorities for this quarter.
Yep.
But this is what we're heads down on. And they connect to some bigger thing, right? We're not just doing it because we think it's fun. We're doing it because of the higher purpose. But that means someone showing up with an idea or something they want to do with you isn't just going to come rapping on the door, trying to schedule a meeting, that they can self-serve, even a sense of that prioritization. Oh, I have an idea, but now I'm looking at your list, right? I haven't even called you yet, but I'm able to find that information, self-serve, recall, and see, well, my idea is actually kind of this little dinky thing, but you're working on some really big rocks.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. So instead of saying, oh, you should help me with my little problem, maybe that gives you, unfortunately, take some time to think, how does my little idea problem maybe either plug into something you're already doing? So then when you show up, that first ask of, hey, I've looked at your priorities for this quarter, and I think I have something that could be accretive to one of them.
Yeah.
Maybe it's self-serving to me, but I'm actually thinking about you. Or you just buzz off and say, maybe not now.
Yeah.
Or I'll go somewhere else. I'll try to help myself. That's the higher order version of a culture of writing things down, really being transparent in what's going on and how to work with you and how to not be knocking on the door and setting up meetings.
Yeah.
So that every little pocket of the organization is a bit more almost API mindset. I have a computer science background. I think that way. Here's us. Here's the documentation for my team.
I love that.
Here's how you get in touch. Here's how you find it, right? And that doesn't mean we never want to see you. It doesn't mean we don't want to have lunch. It doesn't mean you can't pick up the phone and call me like a friend.
Yeah.
But for the business request, I'm kind of asking you to go through a form.
Set out the requirements.
Because I don't want you to call me, but also, if you do that and then 50 other people all do the same thing, it's giving me now something I've never had before, which is data about the demand on our team.
Yeah.
To get more resources or do something differently, whatever the outcome is, but we never have any of that. And it only comes from behaving a little bit more like a help desk does, right? You have to come through this entry point. So that lets us hide how we're servicing that behind the scenes. And we can constantly be iterating it, but the request mechanism is always the same.
Yeah. That's fascinating, Phil, because I like the way you've described that. And I'm assuming that's based heavily on the GitLab.
It's a little bit of seeing the way that GitLab and companies like them work with the brutal transparency, centralized playbooks. And in GitLab's case, what's so great about them is that their company handbook is on the internet. So if you're even thinking about taking a job there, you can go and see pretty deep below the surface, not all the way to the private stuff. We from the outside cannot see their actual day-to-day objectives. But you can read about how the marketing function generally works and self-select in or out if that's actually something you want to do. So they're really good with people who go there and know all about culture before you get there.
Yeah.
A book I mentioned when we were chatting earlier, A World Without Email from Cal Newport, who is a computer science professor. And a lot of his beliefs there, and I think Deep Work and his other books, are just that we use things like email as a dumping ground for everything. And there's a huge amount to be gained by saying, no, this way. When you want to communicate with me, we do it this way and only this way. Because then you get all the data behind it.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of seeing the seeing the power of the remote first companies that have to do this so specifically.
Yep.
And that kind of advice of like, oh, right. That's why sort of technical systems, like how you can have multiple people doing multiple things around one system and it doesn't all break.
I like it because a lot of people will historically say, oh, if I have to document everything, it's going to be out of date by the time I publish it and it's bureaucratic and it slows me down. But the way you've explained that construct is actually we're going to rely on good data and documentation to increase awareness across the organization, increase opportunity and access across the organization.
Yeah. And the kicker when you say like, and I have written guidelines and standards and all that stuff. But what that really meant to most people, and certainly for me back in the day, was like, I made a really nice PowerPoint deck.
Yeah.
And I put it on a shared drive or something that for the most part, only my team can access. And even if it was public, the act of you trying to find it would be brutal.
Yeah.
And so because you can't find it, you can't kind of self-service from it. You have to bother me to get any of that information. Or even worse, my identity is somewhat defined by the fact that I know a thing that you don't know. So that makes me feel valuable.
Mm.
The GitLab version is like, no. Not only is it all written down and not really in like decks, at least the top level version. We are marketing. We do, these are our objectives. This is how we work. This is how we're structured. This is how you get in touch with us. This is how we prioritize. It's just like on a wiki somewhere. GitLab builds their own, or you've got Atlassian using like Confluence or whatever tool you want. But it's not the format that matters. It's the function and how frequently you can be changing it. It is not a document. It's not a deliverable. It is a statement of how things work right now.
Yeah.
Not tomorrow, not in the past, right now. And they're getting GitLab a little bit of an extreme method, but if you look at their materials on like how to do remote and async really well, they have all these excellent values, like a principle of having short toes, which I've always really liked. So because it's not only is it central, but many things are editable by almost everybody.
Yes.
So if I, in one department, see a statement about how another department works or something works that I know not to be true from like lived experience.
Yes.
Instead of making a phone call, setting up a meeting to talk to the committee about this thing where you think it's wrong, just in that moment, you literally assert the change.
Yeah.
Just go, oh, that's wrong. It's this way. And you are forced to explain why in that moment. And maybe in certain cases, certain things have to go through like an approval gate, but then maybe the person who owns the policy just gets like, oh, Phil has proposed that this sentence be different because of his lived experience. And you look at it, you're like, oh, yeah, obviously that is true. Except, great, move on.
Yes. Like, or go and correct and go and realign.
Go and correct. Or
train
even, if,
the person.
Even if I could publish without approval, right. Yes. And then you find out later, oh, it actually wasn't right or there's something I didn't know. Who cares? There's no scolding me. I was just trying to keep moving.
Yeah.
And like contribute. So that's the value. And I don't feel bad if they're like, actually, you didn't know something. I'm like, great.
That's cool.
It's a little change. It's a little thing. But the aggregate of when you have that happening all the time is amazing.
Yeah. And not only at a human level, but at the way that we're starting to move with AI, you've got to think at some stage the AI can observe and say, your process says this, but you actually went down this pathway. Here's a variance.
Yes. And you hit on something I found myself saying a lot to those who don't believe in remote work. And they sort of, I mentioned GitLab now, but I'll finish the story of why I know that. So one of the things I'm most proud of in my time at McKinsey, this is public, I can say this, is that we put GitLab through what's called McKinsey's Organizational Health Index. It's like a 25-year instrument for studying the connection between work practices and business outcomes. And GitLab was like off the charts. And that's because of how, not because they're remote, but because when you are fully remote and you are born remote by design, you have to do all the things that we in normal workland take for granted. You have to do them really explicitly.
Yes.
How you make decisions, how and when you have meetings, what tools you use, performance measures. You can't leave anything to chance because literally no one is ever looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
So I would tell clients, like, I'm not telling you that you have to work fully remotely, like, especially, you know, real estate and facilities companies be like, I'm not suggesting anything of the sort. I'm saying that the companies who operate in a way that allows them to be fully remote is objectively good for you. And to your point, the practices that enable a company to be fully remote, if they want to, are basically also the same practices that, like they're not just remote friendly, they're AI friendly.
Yes.
And they're gig work friendly. So you've got things for the most part written down that will make it easier for whatever co-pilots or agents are in the mix to kind of be watching, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, technology is getting so good, it can go crawling through your whole internet. Maybe you won't have to organize it because you could just say, hey, how does marketing work? And I'll be like, I'll go find that.
Yeah.
Sure. That would be amazing. But it's also, yeah, so AI friendly and then gig friendly, because I really believe in the future where we will see more kind of freelance variable capacity.
Yeah.
And if you're going to keep going back to marketing, if you're like a run of marketing, if you're like, oh gosh, we're doing this really big campaign, we could use some extra hands. That if I see that job posting or whatever, and it's so clearly spelled out, not only like we need some extra social media, something, something support for a couple of weeks. And not just the job description, but like, here is how we work. We have synchronous meetings like Monday, Wednesday, Friday at this exact time. We communicate all the time with Slack. We use like these tools, blah, blah, blah. That I might look at that and say like, check, check, check. And maybe one of them is like, we run our entire operating system on Slack. And I go, oh God, I hate Slack. So I just go, nope, like it's not for me.
Yeah.
Or conversely go, right, wait, okay, you meet Monday, Wednesdays. I'm looking at like my own schedule. Like when do I drop off my kids? When do I'm like, oh yeah, I can plug into that flow.
Yeah.
For 6 weeks. Sure. So I'm here. No onboarding, like crazy uptime, right? Like you have articulated to me, this is how we work. These are the tools that we use. And you just assert, yeah, I got those skills. I got that time. You're telling me other than like those three meetings, I could just like be on my own? Let's rock. Like
we're on.
We're on. And then maybe, you know, I love it. So you call me back or I end up full time. But it's that like assertion and that clarity that makes it easier to grab someone either from the market or maybe even internally. You just find like a project manager whose project is like on a lull for a moment. And you say, I need like this kind of help at this time using these tools. We're this way. And you're like, yeah, I'm in.
I like that. And that actually solves a lot of problems, not only scheduling or bringing people into teams to work the way that they like to work. But it also solves problems of things like scope creep, which is massive, right?
Yes. Right. And look, that's a good example of the way we have been working hasn't always been working as well as maybe we thought.
Yeah.
Mark or others, like on previous episodes, I just think things are accidental.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it was great. You're like, yeah, but not because we designed it to be great.
Yeah.
And COVID has just, or like this remote experiment, just like ripped off all the band-aids and the sellotape that's like holding parts of the organization together and exposed managers aren't very good or like systems that weren't really well defined or things that weren't actually documented the way that they were.
Yeah.
It's not that like the remote is the problem. We were holding it all together because any one employee was being managed by the law of averages. Like some great managers, some mediocre managers, some great documentation, some not so great documentation, but they were all there together.
Yeah.
Take them out and they're like, oh, wow. That department never wrote anything down ever. That's not great.
No.
Internal auditors everywhere are probably having a field day now for being like,
oh, I think so. And I think that may explain this kind of burnout epidemic that we're seeing. You know, COVID was very dramatic and intense for a lot of people just societally, you know, things that we had to go through, seeing people get sick. But then at work, I love your analogy of like all of the sellotape and scaffolding to keep it working. As soon as that all got pulled apart, like there was nowhere to hide for a lot of people. We went through so much change so quickly and some controls that were, you know, I guess scraped together by a few good people at the right time. Once those people leave the organization, bang, no one else really knows how to pick up their stuff.
no. And then that leads to like waiting and uncertainty and like onboarding. Onboarding is a great example just generally of an employee experience that many clients have exposure to think is broken. Like as soon as you say, oh, here's like the arc of a whole employee experience from when we hire you to promote you and you leave, like onboarding sticks out like a sore thumb. Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And it gets invoked a lot for, oh, you've got to come in and be with the buddies and do these things. Like, yeah, but that dependence on like, come be with your buddy in the office sort of implies that you're dependent on the real-time knowledge of that person.
Yeah.
And I think better, like you do the work. Look, someone should be able to do, call it week one or whatever of onboarding, kind of on their own.
Yeah.
And having like a random walk around a lot of documentation, or even when you've got that culture of writing things down, you have more meetings that are recorded.
Yes.
It's easier to be like, look, here's literally like the last 5-10 halls. Here's that best sales call we had all last quarter. Here's that really challenging internal, you know, stakeholder meeting that like Mary over there crushed it. And like, you should watch that.
Yeah.
That you're just sort of curating. These are these best little moments. And then you show up maybe on week two for lunch and everything. And now it's like, right, I have questions, but I've gotten a ton just on my own, which is not isolating. It's like empowering.
Yeah.
It's also there, right? Like with the message, like if you find something on this asynchronous onboarding that you later find not to be true, replace the video.
Yeah.
Like just overwrite.
It's a dynamic library. Yeah.
It's a dynamic library, right? But of course, it's so easy to say, oh, that's a lot of work to do all that now when we only hire like one or two people a year. I'm like, sure, that is a lot of work.
But it's not if as you said, you're recording key meetings, key sales meetings, and you're bringing a library together. Well, someone can come in, if all of the content gets centralized, someone can come in and curate it into an onboarding experience fairly easily.
Yeah, or at least get to the 80%. You're like, oh gosh, we forgot. Bob did that overview of our department for the interns last summer. Is it like 1,000% accurate? No, but we have it.
It's a good artifact.
So just like, watch this. Yeah, it's an artifact. Watch it. It was true then. It's giving you a sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be the perfectly crafted e-learning module with the exact... No. Scrappy's fine.
I think that's...
I don't let perfect be the enemy of the good.
That's very freeing right now, too, particularly with the younger generation coming up loving these shorts, whether it's on Instagram or TikTok or wherever. You can just give them something scrappy, a few, you know, key points over the top of it. With async now, you can start to put comments in and it can live and grow. And
oh my gosh, yeah, that kind of like, right, I comment at meeting at minute 5 about this thing.
Yeah.
You realize that this video sparks a whole conversation. And as long as you have a team agreement around when you're going to use that tool, who's going to check that thing so often.
Yeah, HR needs to be involved.
I'm very interested in this overlap between a topic that's maybe naturally feels like HR, but is also as much, if not more, sort of chief operating officer.
Mm.
Like, it is about the water in the pipes, right?
Yeah.
Like, how we choose to do something. And it's not, if you find out, like, oh, we're studying the onboarding process, and one part of onboarding is terrible because of how we buy the laptops.
Yes.
Like HR cannot change that.
Correct. It's too siloed.
It's too, yeah. And so does that mean you have to have some clients attempt to do a version of creating a consolidated employee experience function by trying to pluck from the components, say, mm-hmm. look, we need some technical people, we need some spatial people, we need some HR people, but to put them somewhere so that when that comes up, you've got someone going, yeah, I know where that problem is. And we can even like helicopter in and try to fix it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we've got fun. We could do that. We're here, back to the higher purpose.
Yeah.
4 out of 5 employees who go through onboarding after week 1 are like confused and unhappy. And that is a problem.
It is a problem.
So we're just working on that. We have no preconceived notion about why. We're just going like bigger the journey at a time and fixing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good call to action, rethinking the COO title or another title. Because, you know, as technology comes to bear, then teams aren't just going to be human. They're already not just human. There's already systems and processes in place, but we're going to see more robotics and AI interacting in the team environment. So it can't sit, I'm getting excited here. So it can't sit just with HR or just with IT or just with marketing. There's going to be someone who's kind of making sense of it all and keeping this kind of dynamic update process in play.
Yeah. And it's sort of the chief of what it feels like to work here.
Yeah.
Is the plain English title of what I think should be employee experience, but not the employee experience version, like the a former WeWork colleague used to call it cultural confetti.
yeah.
Taco Tuesday or the engagement survey. Like, that is not what it feels like to work here. And the behaviors you witness from leadership, the behaviors that you witness from the organization, the way we meet, the tools we use, and the way we learn from the teams that are most successful. I think, you know, IT used to be, it still is in a lot of places, like, oh, we've rolled out Slack.
Yeah.
We keep kind of, our teams right here you go. And they're like, check, we've checked the box. And, you know, it's hard enough for that group because they, half of that function is probably outsourced to somebody else.
Correct.
So they say, you told us to like roll out Slack. So here you go. Ta-da, Slack. You have it now. Thank you. And there's no, people like left to their own devices without the instruction guide for how to like make the most out of those tools. And no one likes to be told like what to do, and not everybody needs every little bit of detail, but how amazing would it be to have that internal partner show and be like, hey, so we saw that you're sort of working this way, or there are signs that indicate your team is, you know, profile A versus profile B, and like, but you're not using this trick, technique, app, Copilot. Like, there's this other thing that is in the organization, and that team over there that functions kind of like you, just like a high level fingerprint, they're using it and they're loving it. Mm-hmm. Like, you could go talk to them. I'm not making this up. They think it's amazing. So do you want to try it? Like,
yeah.
Again, if it doesn't work for you, no harm, no foul. I'm just here to say I can see the whole system, and certain teams behave certain ways. Now we've got this incredible digital fingerprint and even spatial fingerprint. They're behaving sort of like you. They're doing something that you're not doing. Can I make a suggestion? Which is like Netflix is very good at saying, like, I think you'd like this movie. Amazon could probably have, you know, packages showing up at our houses today.
Yes.
For things we never ordered, and they'd probably be pretty close.
Super close.
Super close.
Yeah.
And just like send it back if we're wrong, right? We've got to get that way to sort of work.
Yeah.
And the whole recipe of like certain teams interacting in certain ways, following certain patterns, certain tools, certain places. And nobody wants, I think we're moving beyond like personas. No one wants to be put in a box.
Yeah.
Like, you're an anchor worker. You're a mobile worker. You're an apple. You're a banana. You're an orange.
Yeah.
I mean, like, don't tell me. Because, you know, Netflix doesn't put us into personas. Netflix and Amazon, it's like N of one ultimate personalization.
Yes.
Like, do it for me. So if you come back and say, look, I've actually looked at how you all are doing something together. I'm just making a straight recommendation that is built about how you work.
Yeah.
Not because they think you're a banana profile. Like,
yeah.
That's awesome. And like, that's that group, right? Hey, we're the chief of what it feels like to work here, which means every day in hand-to-hand combat, like, take friction away, remove what another former boss used to call the crimes against productivity, which is a term I love. Just like friction.
Yeah.
We see it. We can see the sign of it. We have an idea for how to get rid of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you do like commodity pricing and over here you guys are like rolling out Slack, but we're just looking for it.
That's
and
right.
Every day, how do we get better?
Yeah. There's definitely something there, Phil. I think I'm trying to fit an acronym together around what it feels like to work here, and I can't. So we're going to have to keep working on that.
I can't either. But it is leading all these companies. It's where you see it like at an Atlassian, at a Dropbox, at a GitLab.
Yeah.
Even at some more traditional companies, Allstate, Target, and 3M, ones that are exploring more like digital and remote first.
Yeah.
These new roles tend to pop up.
Yeah, you got like Andy Dean at Atlassian.
Yeah, exactly. Work anywhere. Team anywhere, like work futurist or head of hybrid work. And like they're all chipping away at different versions of it.
Yeah.
All the way up to really big scale, like cheap but future of work examples. But it's the right idea. It's like, okay, this doesn't exist. There is no benchmark for this role. So let's just try. And they can't solve everything.
No. Right?
Like they're not going to run every function, but they can live in that liminal space.
Yeah.
And just be there around like the operating system of work, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Chief operating systems. Chief.
I don't know. There's like a clever acronym somewhere that someone smarter come. Than me will think of.
You're on the right path. And it actually ties together so many themes that we see from a number of the guests that we've had on the show around interviewing the job or finding what's driving energy in a business or thinking about total talent, you know. Should a piece of work be done by a gig worker versus a full-time employee? You know, the sad truth is that a lot of people have job descriptions, which was the only way the company could squeeze enough work for them to do in 40 hours so that they could hire them for the 30% of things that they're going to do really well every week. And it's just, that's not good for anyone, the team, the individual, the organization.
No. And I think McKinsey, even years ago, I remember reading stuff long before I joined the firm about the utopian future of what kind of roles can, like, with this better documentation, with more consistent ways of working, be more like pool oriented. Classic example in like big corporate would be like the business partners, right? HR's got business partners, IT's got business partners, real estate has business partners, finance has business partners, operations is a business partner, risk, we've all got business partners, which is a way of saying like we're helping to abstract away the complexity of working with us for you.
Yes.
And, but you know, they all go through different ebbs and flows. So they're not all going to be busy at the same time. And that's a great kind of like shared services, business partners, some core skills you got to be really good at.
Yeah.
A lot of soft skills. But why can't you have a little bit more of a pool? Says, they're not gig. They're all employees, but we can like, we could take someone who spends most of their time doing finance sort of management partnership relationship and be like, we like it's comp season. We need extra support.
Yes.
For HR.
Yep.
And be like, again, it's like micro onboarding. Yeah, I can do, okay, great. How's the comp? Good. I know the business people. I know like generally how this place works. You need me to go and push them through a process or run a project or, great. And then I can go back to doing the thing I do most of the time.
And it may all be within the organization, but it also creates this sense for me that there's going to be teams in the future that aren't an agency. It's not a marketing agency and it's not an internal team, but it's like a group of people who always do this type of work across a certain number of organizations. It's like portfolio career management for these people who love to do onboarding. I'm going to do onboarding for 15 companies all year round. And I'm going to cross-pollinate cool stuff.
Right. And look, to do that feels like insane and big and complicated, but it's just, all right, find somewhere. If you have conviction about this future.
Yeah.
It's not 2050. It's not 2025.
Yes.
But like, it's there. It is on the horizon. If you believe that that model is likely to be true in some way, how do you find some little pod out there who you can give license to try something and make mistakes and fail? And even back to whatever I keep coming up with in marketing, like, of course they work with agencies. Like, sure, that's not new, but to whatever the, and I'm not a marketing professional, but whatever that middle ground, like, what would have to be true in order for you to be able to go to Upwork or one of those platforms, like grab a social media person for 100 hours and then go? What are all the things that would have to be true.
Yeah.
To onboard that person to just like the company. Are our policies so prohibitive that it would take them longer to like onboard than to do the work?
Yeah.
Do we have the technical security? Is there a way we could have them be chipping in the way that they need to without necessarily giving them the keys to the kingdom or going through some insane process.
Yep.
What does that mean about like your environment, technical environment, which is all those, like what would have to be true for us to literally get a gig worker to chip into marketing for 100 hours?
Yeah.
And you might find like, it's impossible. There's literally no way we can do it. Be like, all right, try it with another department. It still doesn't mean it's not coming.
Yeah, it's just find where the door may be already open. You can kind of push on it and
get some traction. Yeah, and a leader is just like, yeah, we'll try it. It's going to be weird. And we're sort of trying it on behalf of everyone.
Yeah.
To see how do we do it? Or even like back to onboard, what one team is willing to rethink the process.
Yes.
To see if they can get to a better outcome so that everybody learns from that. It's just this permission that is hard to come by.
I like it. And it goes right back to what you said at the top of the show around those 5% of leaders that approach this workplace strategy, employee experience with a position of like, hey, it's different, but let's explore what could be, rather than have a firm opinion and do the test, learn, fail, do pilots. That seems exciting, and it seems like it's a way to involve the team in how they want to be working in the future too.
Yeah, I think so. And look, the space is the new horizon, and it naturally it does not move very quickly.
Yeah.
Which is true. So the answer is probably not in like rapidly reconfiguring every meeting room in every office and like changing chairs overnight. Like it's probably not it. The dynamic and variable like testing will come from experimenting in how we sort of sit in the spaces that we have access to, which may be our office or not.
Yeah.
And that's why co-working and flex is really great, because you're like, yeah, I could try, even though I could go to like the uptown WeWork, try it. And tomorrow I could go to downtown WeWork and decide like, do I like the vibe?
Yeah.
I could rent furniture now, which is easier to do than it was even like 5 years ago. I could send people to third places. I could have them work from home. I don't know what the right answer, the right combination is, but it's not constantly renovate and change your own office. It's like, how can people make the most of the holistic built environment, and what data is coming off of the back of that movement that you can explore and investigate? Just like I use this tool or that tool. We can A/B test sort of in workplace, but it's really back to like how I fell into this. If you tell a leadership team, hey, I want you guys to work in like a different co-working site every week for a month, that's like asking a lot, and it's complicated.
Yeah.
There's friction. You're like, I'm going to deliberately put friction into your system, but I'm asking you to do it to get for the feedback.
Yeah.
And maybe some group goes, we're in. And every other group goes, oh no.
But at least you learned, and you didn't keep guessing and keep trying the same things, you know, in fads and fashions. You learned what was or wasn't, you moved on to the next thing.
Yeah. And what do you learn from that? Say, oh, okay, that version of it, no good. So let's not do that again, nor hide that we did it.
Yeah.
And then see like, oh, but there was a twinkle there, something in your eye that was like, ooh, a bit of this was better.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a user-centered, like, well, what was that? Tell me more about why, what was better?
That's cool.
And then you just learn, but it's really hard to say, I'm going to let you try, and have a leader who's like, I'll do it.
No, that's neat. Well, it's been a great conversation, Phil. I thought we'd go way deeper into like the physical workplace, but I think where the conversation led around, you know, increasing awareness of teams and how they work together, the importance of how the leader shows up and shares stories. We dive down into that whole API mindset, which I think is wonderful. You know, how do we document what it's like to work with my team, and how do we make that dynamic rather than static? I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, look, if you want to go deep on why most offices are terrible, I'm happy to come back.
We should do a specific show on that.
Look me up. You don't need that. This podcast, I hope, is helpful to do the teamwork.
No, that's it. And then you know, I thought there was some great practical tips for listeners too. You know, record meetings, compile a library of stuff, and maybe curate some of that material into your onboarding or training or ways of working efforts. That's super cool. And we are going to come up with this future title. This
yes, when you think of it.
Yeah.
You
know, someone who's running workplace operating systems.
Somebody's figured it out. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we have operating system engineers like in technical land. It's just like who declares what the operating system is. Maybe the only examples are the companies who are putting a name like Team Anywhere, Virtual First, or Cloud HQ for Zillow, which now has GitLab's old head of remote in it, Darren Murph. Like, you got to give the thing a name.
And yeah, you do.
You got the head of the thing.
All right, we're going to keep working on that. But in the meantime, if any of our listeners want to find you, Phil, to come in and do some consulting or share some ideas and experiences with them on how they're driving their teams forward, how do they best find you?
I'm very active on LinkedIn, top voice there, usually on the platform, or you could check out my website, which is just my name, philpershing.com. Either way, easy to find.
That's neat. Well, thanks for taking the time today, Phil. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thanks, Dean.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,